Hi, this is Phil Lernis, and I'm going to read this announcement precisely as it's written. As the co-host of Chilpack Hollywood Hour, it's always delightful to shoot the transatlantic breeze with the UK Midweek Drive team. Together, we aim to provide the best possible audio backdrop for political sand-nut tea, spelled with a U, in the 21st century. The Is Phil Lernis reporting from the middle ground between science and superstition, and you have entered the podcast zone. I did not correct some obvious typos and incorrect word choices, because honestly, I barely understand the UK version of English to begin with.
Listless, a breakfast table in an otherwise empty room. A young girl, violence in the center of her own attention. The mother reads aloud, the child tries to understand it. She tries to make her proud. The shades go down. It's in her head. Painted room. There's something wrong. Don't call me dumb. My picture, the picture kept will remind me. Don't call me dumb. You're not fit to. The picture kept.
Nancy Wilson, of course, with a tune which is featured in I Am All Girls, which will be covered in this upcoming movie review slot, all being well. But we've got three of the fine foursome of reviewers with us online present. One from Australia, now lockdown Australia, because you're back in it. That's Natasha Armstrong. How are you, Natasha?
Yeah, we're good. We've got enough toilet roll.
Excellent. This is good. Yeah. Lessons have been learned from 2020 and additional toilet paper, which clearly the COVID-19 virus is so frightened of, you know, we'll actually sort of get the thing together, which is marvellous stuff there. So good to hear. Meanwhile, in unlockdown Lincoln, but still shedding her own unique light across the airwaves, it's Yaz DeGraff. How are you, Yasmin?
All good. Thanks, Alex. How are you?
Excellent, splendid. Well, I say excellent. I mean, it's a little bit of a tense day for me, this. And in fact, I was very undecided in terms of what virtual background I should actually choose, because when you actually followed a particular sporting side for over 50 years and you've covered them in a whole variety of ways, etc., you might sort of think as though things could be changing in all sorts of ways. And today, of course, is a huge day for, of course, the citizens who actually go into battle against some evil beings from Chelsea in probably one of the most significant sort of moments of our particular experience. Robin, this means nothing to your good self. I wouldn't expect it to, because, you know, apart from Kit Simons, there have been very few Welsh players who have actually performed for Manchester City, but there we are. How are you there, Robin Pearce, in Wales?
I have not understood one word that you have said in the last couple of paragraphs.
We'll actually sort of agree and say that's okay. We can appreciate that because we're very understanding. That's what we are, very understanding.
If I was any more confused, I'd have to ask you to come with subtitles.
Yeah. Well, there we are. Okay, well, we are waiting Richard Fitzwilliams, but I'm going to investigate whether he's actually read. However, last night, Robin, you decided not to actually join me on a virtual trek over to Palm Springs, Florida, and indeed the joys of Hawaii. You decided, no, I'm going to go for an hour's drive to the cinema and check out A Quiet Place 2. That's not A Quiet Place as well as, it's the sequel to A Quiet Place. In case people were actually thinking, you know, is it A Quiet Place to what? Quiet Place to actually experience lockdown in. Quiet Place to do all sorts of things. Who knows? Let's just quickly, Natasha, have you seen either A Quiet Place or A Quiet Place 2?
No, I think I'm the only person on the planet who hasn't seen quite the first Quiet Place. But I heard lots of good things about it. And particularly the second one, they're gushing about Millicent Simmons's performance. So I would like to catch up on that.
It's fair to say that you'd be the second person, because I also, even though it's got Emily Blunt in, I'm a big fan of Emily Blunt, I haven't seen either Quiet Place 1 or indeed two, but that's by the way. Yasmin, what about yourself? Have you been quiet placing in any way, shape, or form?
Well, I'm bringing everybody's ranks up to three.
Yeah, you see, we're growing. It's a growing campaign to say, please join us if you haven't seen A Quiet Place. Well worth sorting through that. But somebody who has actually gone to see A Quiet Place, because we know that, is Robin Pearce. Robin, would you like to explain, first and foremost, what the experience was like? Did Emily Blunt live up to standards? Should it just be a case of...
Well, first of all, I have to say, I really enjoyed A Quiet Place because it was kind of a new experience, but in a way, it was also a very frustrating experience because there are beings around. We don't know where they're from, whether they're extraterrestrial from another dimension. We really don't know, but they have an appetite for human beings. And this is in rural Appalachia. They home in on sound. They are blind. So the surviving people, until they've figured out, which has happened earlier, that they home in on sound, everybody's got to keep quiet or they just come from nowhere and, you know, you are gone. And this is the tale of the struggle of a rural family and what they do to survive. And it's one of those experiences where there is so little dialogue in the film, which makes it itself a novel kind of thing. But there are plenty of shocks in there because the creatures themselves are actually quite loud. The drawback is, because the film is so quiet, you become even more aware than usual of the people around you who cannot eat quietly. But it was a great film, and I felt very strongly at the time, great as it was, it did not need a sequel. But along came the sequel, and then along came COVID. So intrigued by the trailer, which I've been watching for about a year now, I decided to go and see the film. My main concern was I didn't want this to go the Freddy Krueger route, where A Nightmare on Elm Street in 1985 was a great horror film because we barely saw Freddy himself. We saw glimpses of him. We weren't overly familiar with him, which of course happened when the films became a franchise and he became a pop icon. I don't think that these creatures needed to be seen in every detail, because a fleeting glimpse across the screen as they see somebody out, or a blurry sort of entity in the background, was about all we needed. And the last thing I needed to see was any sort of explanation, because bad things just happen. We don't need to go into the why did all this happen, where did they come from, why are they're just here. So I was a little bit disappointed when Quiet Place 2 started with day one, the flashback to when everything kicked off. But thankfully, that's only a 10-minute sequence. Then, and this is my strongest piece of advice to you if you're going to see the film, you need to see the first one before you see this. If you haven't seen the first one, stay away. You're not going to get it, because it's integral. It's part two. And as soon as the flashback sequence is over, we are exactly where we left off at the end of part one. So all the reveal of the creatures being blind, which we're never actually told, we just see it in a fleeting glimpse of a newspaper headline that they are blind, all that will be lost on you. And it's what happens next as the family try to step out of their home base to make contact with other people. In the middle part, you might feel, you know, we've seen all this before on The Walking Dead. Emily Blunt practically carries the entire production, and she does admirably well. In fact, it's such a strong sequel that I felt, even though this did not happen, I need to stress this, did not happen, it felt like the two films could have been filmed back to back without a 2 or 3 year gap in between. So I would recommend it. It actually won me over. And now we have a final sort of cohesive storyline. I would just say that, you know, for the love of all that's holy, do not make a third. This does not need to be a trilogy. The story is told. Let it go now. Don't make these things familiar. Don't make little model kits of them. They are nightmarish enough as it is. Subtlety, people. Subtlety. I would give this, as a sequel that I thought was needless, I'm going to go with an 8, because there are a few surprises, few shocks, edge of your seat, really good movie.
You can't battle the joys of franchises and the importance of franchises. That's surely modern day capitalism. That's what we need to actually have. You know, without which, you know, if you haven't got an action figure about yourself, then clearly it doesn't exist, or indeed shouldn't exist. But on the basis of what we've just heard, Natasha,
I have actually always wanted to see an action figure of myself, but I put it to the panel, what would it have as an accessory?
I don't know. I mean, I think, Natasha, I'm sure Robin Pierce action dolls would go down a storm in lockdown clad Victoria or Melbourne, would they not?
Yeah, but we'd need to make him an Australian version. He'd need the cork hat, and then he can have like a little crocodile or something. We need to like make him like hemisphere appropriate.
I would have to
send the contract over. I'll sign it.
Yeah, we are. Yes, from Robin's views of Quiet Place 2, is it something which you think, I might well venture across to the Odeon in Brayford Pool and actually check this out, if only to actually tell people to stop eating their popcorn?
You know, if I was into, you know, the thriller and the horror, it was a pretty fine line. Robin almost got me. I probably would have sat there and been like, why am I here? Because Robin sent me here.
I'm going to take that as a compliment.
It is.
In fact, carrying on with the marketing, Natasha, I can see cork hats and also the doll with the slogan, I'm here because Robin sent me here. Maybe one on the front and one on the back. you know, that could be.
I can see my kids. I can see them being all the rage with my kids at kindergarten now. They're going to be all bringing them in.
Yeah. You see what happens when Richard Fitzwilliams can't get into the actual Zoom room? I don't know. We actually start marketing Robin Pierce as a viable alternative. It's wondrous in so many ways. I will not do justice to the next particular movie which we had on the list in terms of being covered, which is, of course, I Am All Girls. Suffice it to say that it is directed by Donovan Marsh, written by Wayne Fitzjohn and Marcel Greif, and indeed stars the fabulous Erica Wessels, who takes a lead in what actually begins as a fairly standard police procedural and then actually magically metamorphoses into all sorts of things. It kind of, you think it's going to go horror, then it goes into NCIS territory, then it goes into all sorts of things, then it goes into a whole variety of things. However, clearly actually spiked into action by that very notion of saying, I couldn't possibly do justice to what Richard Fitzwilliams would be saying with respect to A Quiet Place and how, again, given it's based in his native South Africa, he loves his South African movies, although it is a harrowing tale with all sorts of other areas. Maybe we could actually welcome to the production the awesome Richard Fitzwilliams now. Robin has just dissected A Quiet Place 2, and so far is the only person who's actually seen A Quiet Place 2. And even on those utterances, you see the scary impact it actually has, Natasha, on just mentioning the words, whoosh, instant vanish. He's back. He's with us. He's sorted through now. It's not quiet at all. He's not muted himself. All is well with the world. Richard, have you seen A Quiet Place 2?
I have to tell you that I have seen not only A Quiet Place 2, but A Quiet Place initially. And firstly, my apologies. I got delayed on an unfortunately lengthy telephone conversation about a sensitive matter. So it was really to
build up. Is Harry asking you for more advice, Richard and Megan? Are they still actually seeking your advice?
It was really to build up the tension before my appearance, you see. It's a story going back to my days at the Mall Galleries. Robert Morley was taken to lunch by a noted artist, and he was due to open a show. And the lunch kept going on, and the time of when he was going to speak approached and indeed passed. And the artist said, but shouldn't we be going? Oh, no, dear boy, no. They'll be far, far more pleased. The relief when we appear. So you see, drama, which indeed, to some extent, I would say, was present in A Quiet Place too. I mean, it's a very interesting series. The reason I say it's particularly interesting is firstly, the budget of A Quiet Place initially was $20 million. The gross was $340 million. So we really are looking at something that hopefully will encourage people to go back to the cinema. Now, that is my first point. But if you see A Quiet Place 2 without having seen its predecessor, and remember that's back in 2018, I mean, I do think there's a little bit of a problem there because you have a story which is surely gripping and certainly unusual, but will it fascinate you? Will you remember what was in the original? Just to remind listeners, as Robin will of course have already told them, a horror film directed and acted in by John Krasinski, and we're thinking of the original one, and of course this was dealing with most of Earth's population being annihilated, and creatures covered with armor who are blind with a bizarrely acute sense of hearing. And we had a family, Lee, played by John Krasinski, Evelyn, by the gorgeous Emily Blunt, Regan, a deaf daughter, played, of course, by the deaf actress Millicent Simmons, Marcus, played by Noah Jupe, and Beau, who was killed initially, as Lee was in the first series. Important to remember this in the first film. And then we have a movie where the three inspirations, Alien, No Country for Old Men, and In the Bedroom, were infinitely superior, by the way, both in my view to the first and indeed to the second, you have to silently scavenge so that these monsters don't know that you're around. You go barefoot in the open, which has its problem if there's the odd trap, not only set by your good self, Alex, with which we are familiar every week, but indeed, if there's some form of a man trap in the garden, it's not a good idea. But as a sequel, well, written and directed again by Don Krasinski, and the family departs with Lee's death and Evelyn's newborn baby, and with radios and microphones fending off these creatures, and run across, or at least discover Emmett, who's a friend of Lee, played by Cillian Murphy, and we find that there is a signal, there is life elsewhere. Could it be on an island, and could indeed Regan decide to go off on her own to discover where the island is? Evelyn pleading with Emmett to bring her back, and he decides to help her, and we discover indeed there are humans, both feral and indeed in some cases rather more relaxed. The creatures and water, how it develops, does Regan find and Emmett find their island? What happens indeed to the immaculately coiffured Evelyn? And indeed, what could there be a sequel? Indeed, echoes of the Hunger Games here. I mean, I do have to say that there are scary moments. I do have to say that I rather enjoyed it, and seeing it on the large screen was a benefit, as it obviously would be. I would love, and I said this when I was reviewing The Hunger Games years ago, it would be absolutely marvelous, indeed something I would pray for, a little bit of delineation of character. You didn't have to do very much acting here. By that, I exclude the creatures, who certainly were doing rather a lot of acting, writhing around in strange ways. Some good cutting. I mean, there are two action sequences that I'd particularly recommend, and I mean that they are spectacular. One occurs near water where feral humans cost Emmett and Regan, and the other, it's intercut with what happens to Evelyn when there's a creature approaching her, and it seems that could be the end, could it? And those are very well cut, and that shows indeed that the series has got potential life. But I do have to say it is rather long. I do have to say that if we had a little more of a plot, it would have been welcome. And I finally say that I really, seriously, truly, madly, deeply think it's a danger when you've got to be careful in the world if you speak too loudly to attract the monsters. But equally, if you whisper, those vital lines of dialogue are difficult to hear, and I did find that a problem. Having said that, yes, there are shocks, and having said that, there is a certain amount of excitement. And having said that, I echo Frances McDormand, go back to the cinema, and if you like this sort of thing, the movie will please the fans, and that's the point.
Well, Richard, the key question is, was anybody actually eating in the cinema in which you watched A Quiet Place 2?
Alex, if you did anything so absolutely, well, almost unreal in a cinema at a critic screening, you would never be asked to another in your life.
I just put that out there because it was a complaint by our Welsh correspondent. However, we're at an interesting juncture here in which Yaz and Natasha have the opportunity to actually score our two film critics who have delivered their views completely separately, as you can tell. Richard had no idea in terms of what Robin's actually said. Robin obviously understands Richard, but they're sitting there, obviously, much like Britain's entry into the Eurovision Song Contest, awaiting some marks from the actual correspondents in Australia and beyond. So I can tell that it's not a man trap, honestly. And the fact that we've already said Robin can actually have the Australian hat with corks on it, together with "because Robin sent me here" on one side, and maybe on the other side, "Richard told me not to go," could be another sort of aspect which could be there. But yet, Natasha, first of all, who would you say was the better reviewer?
Alex, this is mean. I think I am inclined to agree with what Robin was saying in terms of sometimes you should let a film die. So I feel like in terms of, there's a lot of franchises nowadays that sort of extend things to milk it dry. And I feel like it's a really sad thing when that happens. So I agree very much, I think, with what Robin was saying with that. Yeah. But I love you too, Richard.
It's a tough call, but sometimes those calls have to be made. So Richard hasn't persuaded you to actually say, yeah, I'm going to go and see it.
I might see it, but I might watch it with subtitles, given Richard's advice about it being a lot of whispering. I feel like that would be something that would be helpful to watch in my own home. Yeah, just a little bit about effects.
Of course, as you're leading the way once again in Australia by being back in lockdown, you may never get the opportunity to go to the cinema ever again. So that's all nice. So it's fine. It's just a thought there. Yaz, what about yourself? Where are you going to go? Are you Camp Robin or Camp Richard?
Bad Alex. I would say they're both really good. I think I am going to agree with Natasha on the part where if I do end up watching it, which is probably like a good like 2%, I will probably have the subtitles on. But as I said before, that 2% of me not gonna watch it, I'll probably end up there because of Robin, with my Robin action figure doll in the scene.
Yeah, so because Robin sent her there. Well, there you go. Interesting stuff. Okay, Richard, before you arrived, we were just beginning to open up the experience of what initially I thought, oh, where are we going with this one? Is it just going to be a depressing case of human trafficking and so on? But actually, I ended up enjoying I Am All Girls. Well, I say enjoy in inverted commas, because I did feel it kind of worked, as long as you can kind of acknowledge the notion of NCIS and many police procedurals at the fore, together with an excellent performance by Erica Wessels and indeed Masana Magangi. Anyway, I'm not a South African. You are. You'll be able to actually say, yes, this is a genuine, authentic take on South African history of the latter part of the 20th century. Over to you.
Well, firstly, just one little comment about Quiet Place 2. I would remind everybody that I did complain that it was pretty vacuous. So I'm echoing, in a sense, what I didn't hear from Robin, but I mean, what he appears to have said. And regarding the Hunger Games, that is precisely what happened. It was strung out almost unbelievably. All I'm trying to do is to get people who like that sort of thing back to the cinema to see it, but I didn't myself greatly admire it, as I hope I made clear. It's
Don't backtrack now, Richard. I know it's up there with Lawrence of Arabia as one of your favorites.
No, I'm not backtracking. I'm saying that I, quite honestly, when I was with a friend and when we were saying afterwards, my goodness gracious me, that could have been so much better. But having said that, it had the shrills and spills that I hope it's going to get people back with subtitles, if you like, listening, or watching at least, regarding I Am All Girls. This was a surprise to me. I hadn't heard of the episode involving child trafficking in apartheid South Africa, the last days of it. The title is a little deceptive because it doesn't appear to make a great deal of sense. It seems obviously, I can see obviously it's a universal theme about exploitation, but I just thought it a rather strange title. And I was really gripped by this movie. It's set in Johannesburg, the last days, apartheid era is ending, and two detectives team up despite the difficulties of the funding for this sort of thing, to investigate child trafficking, which may involve, according to a witness that they've, or someone they've arrested, may involve up to some 40 children. And one of the things, it's a form of a docudrama, it really grips you. This is a suspenseful movie. I found it very powerful. I think Donovan Marsh's direction, and particularly the visuals, the way they use overhead shots, most impressive sound, absolutely pivotal to this, really, really good. Creating an atmosphere, both the sinister in the city, in the townships. There's a police raid in a township, which is wonderfully cut. So I really praise that here. Two performances. Very good, I thought. Erica Vessels plays Jodie Sneyman. She's having her own problems. She's also involved. She's traumatized by the job she's doing, which is indeed, it's a terrifying and particularly horrible case based loosely, admittedly, on something that really did happen. And there's no question also that Tom Bozicki, played by Lubin Boya, very, very good performance. The two detectives, they're drawn together and both of them have agendas. But what could Tom Bozicki's agenda be? I have to say that not knowing the plot, I'm going to avoid any spoilers here.
The clue is in the name and Tomba, Richard. The clue is in the name and Tomba.
I dare say it might be. I can just tell you that if you don't know anything about this movie, you'll be drawn into the surreal and depraved world of the child trafficking, which is so terrifying. And apparently, as I say, it was based on a real life case. But the way tension sustained in this film, I would say the relationship between the sapphic relationship between the two detectives is skated over a little, or so I felt. And also there are some improbabilities in the plot, one or two cliches. Certainly when one expresses a feeling to the other during a car chase, I would mention that. And the other,
Richard, it's made in South Africa. You can't have kind of enlightenment.
Hey, now that was an outrageous car. You're getting more outrageous, Alex, by the week, if that's possible. I do have to say that also villains, when they've been spotted, are not likely to hang around, and that happens a bit without going into the details as to how, but it's the documentary feeling of this movie, and this is a really powerful feminist film. So I urge you to see it. I think it's got very good performances, and I think that the way it's been edited and the way it's directed, it draws you in. This is a really strong thriller. And whereas I saw it on the small screen, give me this or A Quiet Place Too, I would take this any day.
Which is why we launched this particular sequence with Nancy Wilson singing from Indeed, I Am All Girls. Yasmin, would you be checking out I Am All Girls this very day via Netflix?
I was actually going to watch it yesterday. I watched the trailer yesterday, and I was quite intrigued. It looked really good, and I could see all the things that Richard said within the trailer.
Hmm. Natasha, what about yourself?
I'm really excited actually for this one, having just like watched the trailer. I saw the name, and like Richard, is it going to be another Mary Sue kind of situation? Are we going to have Rey Skywalker coming in kind of thing?
With a mask, of course.
Goodness, don't get me started. But no, actually watching the trailer, I thought it looked really gripping. And I'd be really interested to get my, something I might watch with my partner's family, actually. They were in South Africa kind of towards the end of that apartheid and stuff. It'd be really interesting to sort of get their opinions on it. So no, definitely one for me.
And Robin?
It is a strong possibility. I hadn't heard about it until right now. But yeah, it sounds like a strong possibility for me.
Opens up a whole range of wondrous things in so many wondrous ways. But let's turn briefly now to obviously the experience in Australia. Natasha, as ever, you provide us with some insightful comment on what things are going to be sort of taking place and what is happening. So what is the situation at present in Australia in terms of what you're seeing and so on, and what's actually taking place there?
So basically, we had a bit of a leak. We had a gentleman who was in our one of the hotels quarantining in South Australia. given the all clear to leave the facility, no traces of COVID, cross the border back into Victoria, and unfortunately was carrying, we believe, the Indian variant of COVID, and we now have about 45 cases in the state, so it's gone up very, very quickly. So yesterday we shut down into lockdown, back into full lockdown, so you can leave the house to get vaccinated, to get 2 hours of exercise, for, you know, supplies, elderly care, or essential work. All the schools, everything is shut again.
Well, hopefully Sadiq Khan is paying attention and will actually fairly rapidly actually implement such delightful things in London as well. Because, as you know, if you're not actually sort of screening a whole variety of other bits and pieces within London, it's not the same. You should have lockdown all the way. Sorry, Richard. Just kidding. Honestly, it'll happen, I'm sure.
Alex, I really have to protest. Each week it gets worse and worse. Question enrages him. Stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once. Macbeth, Lady Macbeth.
Well, speaking of which, can you identify the two souls who have actually popped up behind me in one of your favourite movies, Rich? Does anybody like to give any thoughts as to who they might well be?
I can't see the faces.
Yeah, no, that's the whole point. It's can you recognise the actors from their torsos alone? I'll put you out of misery, basically. It is, of course, the wonderful Hugh Jackman and Nicole Kidman at a premiere for Australia. I thought I'd put it up for yourself, Natasha, because I know that you're based in there, and we know that actually, with that alluding at least once a month to that classic movie, Richard, life just wouldn't be worth living, would it, really? So there we go.
May I just humbly suggest that showing the torsos at the premiere isn't quite the same as showing a clip from the film which there was a chance of me recognising. The horror of it remains.
Sooner or later, we'll come back to the whole system. I'll just go on Dragon Boat Racing. That's the important thing, because that's the sort of person I am. A little bit of Dragon Boat Racing, you can't get enough of it. Okay, score for I Am All Girls, Richard. What score would you give it?
Oh, I'm going to 4.5. It should get 4 because there were glitches in the plot. But this is one of the surprise movies of recent months. And, you know, I'm delighted that others will be watching it because I really think that highly of it.
And that will presumably will be out of 5 as opposed to out of 10. Is that the case?
4.5 out of 5. Oh, well, yeah, that would be, well, 8 or 9. Yes, yeah. Yes.
I'll go for 7 because, again, it does switch. And, of course, the great news is there's a huge opportunity for a sequel. No spoilers, but it could take place in Iran. I shall say no more. That's all I will say at this particular moment. It's worthwhile considering. Okay, Richard, that's pretty much it. So unless you had wanted to squeeze it...
We haven't scored Quiet Place 2. What did Robin give it?
I actually went for an 8.
There we are.
He went for an 8. I would go for, and a little reluctantly, for a 6. Mm.
There we have it. So, Jes de Graaf, Natasha Armstrong, or as we like to refer to her these days, Natasha Lockdown Armstrong. It's just it works well, really. I think it's like, you know, there was a doll called Stretch Armstrong. It could be Natasha Lockdown Armstrong. It's great. Richard Fitzwilliams, Robin Pierce, of course, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. Keep watching the movies. Oh, any thoughts as to what we're doing next week, Richard, when you can arrive, I don't know, whenever you want to, really?
Well, it's nice to know that. I will bear it in mind, and it might well include Cruella, who I think would be the ideal companion for you, Alex.
Richard, honestly, these days, and Robin, are you any thoughts to what are you spiraling? Are you going to Zombie Land? Are you going to Las Vegas? Are you going to Zack Snyder Land? Where are you going to take us?
I've already seen Spiral, and I will definitely be checking out the Zack Snyder zombie movie this week.
Upcoming, Robin will be back with us to deal with another extraordinary interview and another life story and a life saga of an individual who's had quite literally so many cases of epilepsy. It's frankly quite unbelievable. But James will be coming up to talk us through that whole system. For the moment, though, to Richard Fitzwilliams, Jes de Graaf and Natasha Armstrong, keep on keeping on. And, of course, keep watching the movies.
time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
Now, when you've actually got a work as a landscape gardener, you're a personal security expert and self-defense coach, you might well sort of think, okay, what can I do next? Well, I know, I'll write my memoir. I'll write my autobiography, Life in the Shadows, A Life of Epilepsy. And indeed, when we look at some of the tales of this particular aspect, with 465,000 seizures across life, at least 150 a day when uncontrolled, this is an extraordinary tale, an extraordinary narrative. Indeed, one urologist has actually described our next guest as a miracle, and quite rightly so. We're delighted to welcome that miracle to the Midweek Drive today. Following our cinematic review, of course, it's the wonderful James Bailey. How are you, James?
Very well, thank you. And thank you for obviously taking my call and interviewing me. I really appreciate it.
It's always great. Now, I'm going to hand over initially to Robin, because I think we've both been really impressed by this narrative, which is wonderful. But actually, before we go to Robin, just share that tale with us, because you have had one of the most extraordinary life passages that I can recall in any case. So just share with us in terms of how you were first diagnosed with epilepsy, how it manifested and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. So it started around, we had suspicions when I was 18 months, but got properly diagnosed at the age of two back in 1995. Pre-internet, you've got a lot more support now than back then. Suffered a blow to the head, which damaged my left temporal lobe, which it escalated from there. I was admitted into Adam Brooks and put under the regional head neurologist. Nothing was controlling me. Finally, they mixed a combination between Tegretol and Lamictal Amoxicillin, which managed to get somewhat control. But to be honest with you, from the age of two up until about 10, I was out of it. In all honesty, we stopped counting at 100. And going into 2019, as obviously an adult, I'd wake up and within the first 2.5 hours, I was having over 100 mixture of complex partial seizures, or commonly known as focal seizures now. I was having the odd 1 or 2 grand mal. And as far as seizures go, I'm like a Ferrari. I'll start as quick as I stop. And when we was working out how many I've had roughly, it's terrifying. I fully appreciate each one could have been my last. So I think in that sense, he calls me a miracle as well, and one in a million, because all it would have took is for me to obviously fall over, whack my head. But it also strives me to be the best I can be. There's so many limitations and rejections you meet in life, but the battle continues.
Certainly the inspiration that I pick up from the actual autobiography as well. But Robin, over to yourself.
Well, I am humbled just to be here to listen to this story. There is an old saying that what doesn't kill me makes me stronger, and you seem to be the very epitome of that notion. I was reading through your biographical notes, and okay, 465,000. Thousand.
Yeah, it's terrifying. Yeah, I didn't like it.
You have managed to carve out a career as a landscape gardener, which one would imagine is kind of a solitary pursuit.
Yeah.
Unless you're working with a team, which most landscape gardeners I certainly have met don't. But it gets even more unlikely and bizarre than that, because you have won gold championships for judo and kuksul one. I don't even know what that is, but I may have eaten it once. You build yourself confidence, and you've reached black belt. You've won gold awards, and any impact to your head, and I can't stress this enough, could be your last one. I mean, Yeah. I've spent much of my life, as Alex will tell you, either reading or watching superhero comics or movies, and you, sir, are the real thing.
Thank you. My first question,
maybe the only one I'll ever need to ask you, is...
By the way.
What the heck keeps you going?
That is something I still try to work out to this day. I think it's...
If you find out what that formula is, James, do not mess with the formula.
Absolutely. It's just, I think, over the years of being bullied and the endless rejection, I find it either breaks you and you can...
Was this because you were perceived as different or weak in some way?
Yeah, my bullying started around year four, which is really when I got introduced to school, and it carried on until kind of like leaving school at the age of 16. Every day I'd have kids walking by in primary school mimicking my seizures as I was going down the corridor, be called things like epileptic freak and the rest of it. And I got blackmailed in school. Kids would often threaten other kids to spoke to me.
Blackmailed?
Yes, yeah. A couple of students thought it'd be funny to trick me into thinking it was a college girl to send indecent images of myself. And less than a week later, they were being showed around the school, in secondary school. It only got resolved when my parent actually picked my phone up and found it by accident. If there was any way they could have broke me, they done it. And to this day, it was... You asked how I crack on and how I carry on. That's partially, I think, when I went down the self-defense route as well, was ultimately because I got fed up of the limitation and rejection. So I created my own opportunities. I figured, yes, a bad blow to the head could have been devastating, but if I look at it like I don't let anything stop me from doing what I want to do, least of all epilepsy. I never go, I shouldn't do this because of my epilepsy. I don't even think of that. I go, do I want to do it? Yes, and I'll do it. However, the key thing here is I accept the consequence and I know the risk. The minute, as soon as I started accepting my epilepsy, controlled my life, was the minute I struggled.
So as soon as you recognize the problem and you start working on a solution, isn't it true that you then own the problem? And as soon as you own the problem no longer owns you?
That's bang on. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying my philosophy is how you control seizures. Not at all. That's what the medication's there for. However, I speak to people and I mentor individuals as well. And a common question I get asked is, aren't you worried about having a seizure? Absolutely. However, I can either sit at home and wait in these four walls and wait for something that may or may not ever happen again, or I can go outside into the real world, enjoy my life, and know that one day it may come, but I'd much rather be living my life, going on holidays, going into town and the rest of it, and enjoy it. You know, it's like anything, it's quality of life.
Well, absolutely. You can't control, obviously, what life throws at you, but you can control how you react to it. And you seem to have come onto a winning formula, because one of the things I've told my kids, who are both grown up now, is the only real limitations you'll come up against in your life are the ones that you put on yourself.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest with you, my book, Light in the Shadows, A Life of Epilepsy, is all about giving you a real deeper understanding, answering all of the questions that a parent might have for a neurologist that can't answer because it's from first-hand experience. And I've been told by medical directors, head of neurology, I am an expert in my own right. My sheer volume of experience, because I've been uncontrolled as a toddler, a child, a teenager, as an adult, I've had to create my own opportunities. The army rejected me, police rejected me, everybody was rejecting me. So I took it upon myself to go, fine, I'll save up, I'll work stacking the shelves, I'll save up enough money, and I'll just go and qualify as a close protection operative, aka bodyguard myself. I went private. And that's what it all comes down to. I knew one day I probably won't be able to drive. So I saved up enough money to start my landscaping company, and I instantly took somebody on as a driver. So now I've got 6 employees and I don't have to drive. So it's very much, you find the weakness and you turn it into a strength. Now, how you go about that is each journey's different, but that's very much where the book helps, and it answers to questions, and it's got a fascinating bit in there about bullying. I was almost bullied as long as I've had epilepsy, I suppose you could say.
Again, as Robin said, it's an amazing narrative, an amazing story. Going back to what we were saying before we actually started the interview, that you know, I think there will be Hollywood studios beating a path to your door now to say we want this as a narrative. Because I mean, again, a question for Robin. I mean, this is surely the ultimate Hollywood hero story, is it not? I mean, how you actually triumph over adversity.
You know, I think so, and I think there's definitely a film that could be made of this. But my, and I mean absolutely no disrespect,
your story
is so incredible. Believe it? This is the thing.
I mean,
you are here, you are right in front of me on my screen. I'm talking to you. I've read your bio notes, and I'm like, this is like something that Stan Lee would have written, you know?
But I'm going to be honest. I've been very fortunate, but that's why I think I've been compared to a miracle, one in a million. What's fantastic is all my medical notes prove it. You know, I've got everything to verify that it's all facts. And I was saying kind of like the interview, sometimes people go, oh, surely writing a book must have really helped. No, am I... The traumatic experiences that
you had to relive it all, didn't you?
I had to, and I started writing it back in 2018, but I couldn't buck up the courage to do it. It was actually a girl in a pub that she was 8 years old with cerebral palsy and epilepsy, and her parents were sitting down, and it was like fate. They turned around and went, "We would give anything to just find out how she's feeling." And I got pushed into limelight by my parents, and they went, "Talk to him." And I can't describe it. I knew then I had something I could put out to the world. And that's why I also offered a mentoring side of it as well, because I appreciate you can read it. But like you just said, when you see it, it's completely different. Don't get me wrong, having that many seizures, my right side where it's mainly affected is battered. But I still train. And I believe martial arts, self-defense is so good for your mental frame of mind. I think that's what's kept me fighting. It's that I'll get through this. I've been at the bottom. I'll get up again.
James, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with yourself today. Light in the Shadows, A Life of Epilepsy is, of course, the title of the text. People presumably can get hold of this on all the usual channels and systems. People listening to this, and they might sort of think, yeah, this resonates with our own experiences, or we'd like to find out. How can they follow you on social media? Or can they purchase the book? What's the next stage they should take?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. You can order it from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the main ones. It's got my contact details inside it, so people can then reach out to me alongside social media, because as I mentor people, there's regular updates on my social media. So I explain what best ways to deal with a portable EEG, how I dealt with all of my anxieties and insecurities. My advice to parents would be, there will be regular updates on there, because I think that's what people want to see. They want to see like proof. They want to see what you're doing with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, I think,
and of course, being that you're only 27 now, there's plenty of time for that sequel.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Like I put in the back of it, you know, this isn't the end of my journey. It's just the beginning. I've got a nice line in there, which is, I may not be able to change the world, but I can change the world for someone else. I've stopped one person from jumping off a bridge just through chatting with him. I've yeah, I've done all sorts.
James Bailey, well, I think it's fair to say we're humbled in your presence. Keep on keeping on. Keep up the excellent work. And I'm sure we'll speak again soon. Take care now. All the very best.
Absolutely. Thank you. Take care all. See you soon.